Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 200th episode of the Tilehurst End podcast, the Reading FC podcast by fans for fans. And what a show we have in store for you this week. No match review, no news bites, no mailbag, as instead we talk to five fabled minds from Reading FC podcasting past and present to hear their favourite memories from supporting and covering the team. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me over the next hour will be Johnny Fordham, Charles Watts, Dan Wimbush, Alan West, and Paul Williams. So, without further ado, let's get cracking. Back to the world of Reading podcasting, Mr. Johnny Fordham, the Reading Post reporter from, we reckon, about 2009 to 2013, as we've just been working out. Johnny, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's great to be back on the podcast. It's obviously been, what, it must have been about 5 years or so since I was last on here with that troublemaker Westy and Williams. So now it's great to be back.
Yeah, and we will be chatting to those two later on to hear their memories of their back room with the washing machine going on and all that sort of stuff.
So, yeah.
So it's a bit of a different sort of world you're in now with the sun and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I left in 2013, and I was still covering football back then. And then a few years ago, I got the opportunity to cover England in the rugby after that infamous 2015 World Cup. So it's been a brilliant kind of time covering the rugby, because obviously England have been fairly successful during that period. And then if you look at Reading's fortunes, I mean, kind of, a bit of the doldrums, but it seems like the good times are coming back now, really. Obviously, you know, a couple of promotions and stuff like that when I was covering them, and relegations and everything. And some decent FA Cup runs, but I'm kind of cautiously optimistic for the incoming season in how they'll do, obviously. Yeah, can they get a goal scoring? I think that's going to be the one big worry this year. But no, I'm looking forward to seeing how they do. It seems to be that the club have kind of got themselves back on their feet really a little bit now.
Yeah, it seems like there's a sort of familiar feeling about Reading now that you probably enjoyed when you were back in your reporting days at the club. And for this sort of, as our 200th episode, we're asking people for their favourite Reading FC moment and everything, where would you sort of lay your cards down and say that your favourite memory is either as you are a Reading fan or as a reporter?
Yeah, I mean, when I look back at it, I think that when I was offered the job, I was working at the Reading Post as the prime reporter, and it was quite a hotbed of a patch, because at the time you had the Road Wars TV programme, so I used to go out with the cops on those kind of things, and it was quite an exciting gig. And then obviously I'd have Reading matches to look forward to on the weekend and midweek and stuff like that. And
probably prepared you quite well for Anton Zingarevich taking over then, in that sense.
Your words, not mine. I don't want to knock on my door anytime soon.
We don't have lawyers, so.
But yeah, it was, I was kind of a bit, I always wanted to go into sports writing, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to cover my team, because you know, all of a sudden something that becomes fun and you're kind of, your release from work is then all of a sudden it kind of just swamps you, and it's all about, all of a sudden your life is just all about that one football club. But, you know, I had a brilliant time. I mean, my first manager was Brendan Rodgers, and as a journalist and as a young journalist setting out, he was absolutely fantastic to deal with. I could call him up whenever about whatever, any kind of transfer rumours. I'd phone him up and say, look, what about this? What about that? And he'd be like, no, you need to be looking here, or look, I tell you what, we're actually going to sign someone tomorrow. This is the guy. I don't want you printing it until this time. Because the club don't know I'm telling you this, but you know, if you put this in the paper, then, I'm pretty sure that it'll come off and stuff like that. So he was a great help as a journalist. And, obviously that one didn't last too long. You know, I remember at Christmas time when he got sacked, I was it was at Christmas time with a really, really bad snow, and Reading was absolute gridlock, and I was texting straight away, and I think he'd gone back to Ireland initially when it first happened, and he said, look, I'll let you know when I'm back home in Reading, and as sure as that, a couple of days later, he sent me a text saying, do you want to come around this afternoon and we'll have a chat? He said, bring Eddie Greville, who was our snapper, who still is the Reading snapper. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your fans have seen him and know him, so... we braved the snow. We drove up to his house in Tilehurst, and he gave us, you know, as much time as we wanted with him. And he was just a decent bloke. And I felt, I didn't feel sorry for the way that things turned out for him, because I think that's the wrong way to say it. But I think that, the way sometimes he came across didn't always endear himself to the fans, and obviously the constant, you know, mini Mourinho and kind of Chelsea and all that kind of stuff followed him around, and everyone thought that he was going to be the new Mourinho, and it never turned out like that. But he was someone who had a lot of love for the club and a lot of love for the town, and, you know, his father-in-law, Nick, again, I'm sure someone a lot of Reading guys know from his time at the supporters club there, and worked out down at the training ground and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was sad for him the way that it all ended, but I think it was probably the correct thing. I think if he was to look back at it now, he probably would have done a lot of things differently. His playing style didn't catch on, and it was complete change to how it was under Steve Coppell. But yeah, I weirdly remember one of our first big interviews we did. I just probably trying to work out how to make this sound not dodgy, but it was actually in Sweden. And he was like, oh, come up to my hotel room, we'll do it in there. So I was like, okay, you're thinking, oh, he's the Reading manager, he'll probably have a big hotel suite or something. Got up to his room, it was tiny. There was nowhere to sit. So he was sitting on one side of the bed, and I was basically sitting at the foot of the bed, doing the interview with him. But, that was a good time, good kind of learning experience. And then when Brian McDermott came in, it was kind of, you know, it was almost like it was, in a way, it kind of continued in the same way. He was just so easy to deal with. And, you know, he was slightly more guarded than Brendan to start with. He wouldn't just kind of blurt out everything to you. But, you know, you had a good enough relationship with him. And I'd say my relationship with him by the end was pretty solid. You know, we had our ups and downs, and there was a few letters from Nigel Howe to the Reading Post at the time when I was covering them, because they weren't happy with some of the things we were saying when it started going bad. But, you know, you're always going to get that. And I'm sure if you speak to Charlie Watts or Nick Ive or Clive Baskerville, they would have had thousands of those as well. So that's just comes with the territory. But, yeah, it was good times with Brendan, good times with Brian. And my best memories when I look back at it all now with the summer tours. I mean, like I was saying, you know, that one in Sweden was good fun. And, Then when Brian McDermott came in, there was a couple. He did one in he did a couple in Slovenia, and he did one in Portugal. And you know, because I was the only journalist out there for most of it. I mean, Tim Deller would come out for a little bit, and Mick Gooding would come out as well. But for most of it, I was the only journalist there, and
having first dibs basically.
Yeah, and because of that, Brian basically said to me, "You're either with us or you're not with us." And I was like, look, I'm going to stay my distance, but if I'm allowed to come down to training, I'll come down to training and watch. That'd be great. And he's like, yeah, you can come down to training, but you've got to jump on the team bus. And I was like, oh, you know, because as soon as a journalist jumps on the team bus, then the players, you're just a sitting duck. They're going to try and, you know, they're not happy about their player rating in this game. And some of them will tell you about it. If you're Ian Hart, he'll tell you about it, which he told me about a couple of times, that he wasn't happy with the fours and fives that I used to give him.
I can see that as a very useful tool for McDermott, actually, because he was such a team spirit kind of guy. It almost seems like he kind of uses you as a point for the players to rally around, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? I got on with McDermott's squad pretty well. You know, there was some... I pretty much got on with them all really well, actually, because, again, it's such a small environment. And for being on those tours, what Brian would make you do was he'd make you play in a five-a-side football game every day after training. So it'd be Brian McDermott, Nigel Gibbs, who's one of the all-time Watford record appearance holders, 600 odd games. Then you've got a former Arsenal midfielder. You've got Nigel Gibbs, Watford. You've got Carl Halabi, the sports scientist, who's a big lad and knows how to handle himself. Sal Bibber, who's another big lad. And then you've got me, who's 5'9". never played a professional football game in my life, surprisingly. And, it was good fun because, I'd have to scrounge a pair of boots off one of the players. It would normally be someone like Shane Long or Joby McEnough who would lend me their boots. And then we'd have a little kick around and, so it would be me, Tim Deller, Mick Gooding against the Reading backroom staff. And it was great fun. I remember one time in Portugal, Adam Federici came and played and he almost absolutely broke both my legs in one of the most ridiculous tackles ever. And again, I thought we got on well. There was no bad blood in it, but luckily I managed to jump just at the right time as all the players watched. So that was, that was good fun. And it's something that as a journalist and as a fan of football and as a fan of a club, I very much doubt that would happen anymore anywhere, at any club really. But that was always something that Reading were very good at. I would come down to breakfast every morning and have to sit on the table with Brian McDermott and Nigel Gibbs and Sal Bibber, and there would be a flip chart in their little area of the breakfast room. So it was like a big big hotel. So all the players would have their dining area, and then there was a little kind of like almost private dining area in the corner where the coaches and the backroom staff sat, and Luke Anthony and Dan Buchanan as well in the S&C and physio department. So it would be a big flip chart on the wall. It would basically be number of times that you'd given away the football in the previous day's five-a-side. And even if I scored a world-class goal, which didn't happen, but even if I had, I still would have. I was streets ahead in this chart. It was, it was great fun, and it kind of, it makes you realise that these guys are just all, they're just all normal blokes, really, at the end of the day. Yeah, they're on £10,000 a week, but a lot of them are just kind of normal, decent lads who are doing a job that they love, a lifestyle that they love, and they just want to have fun. And it was, those tours were brilliant because you see another side of footballers and also the club that you don't always get to see. And, I love those tours. And again, there was other, I had to stand in front of the whole team and sing annoyingly, which is something that Tim Deller chickened out for, which make sure you leave that bit in because he copped out on it.
That's still a ritual that goes on today with people on them, players on their first away trip.
Good, because I was made to do it, and I still haven't played for Reading. so I was made to stand on a chair in the dining hall in front of the whole Reading squad, and I sang. What did I sing? I think I sang Brown Eyed Girl. So I was up in my chair for about, a good couple of seconds before the boo started coming in. So I kind of, rattled through and then sat down, kind of a few boos and a few cheers. But I got a text from McDermott when we got back to England saying, good on you and proud that you had the balls to do it. So that was nice that at least he acknowledged it. I didn't want to do it, and Della didn't want to do it, and Della still hasn't done it as far as I know. So he needs to be reminded of that because he wanted to cop out and do a rap with me, which I don't even know if Tim Della knows what rap music is. So I don't know how that was going to work. But those tours were great. And at the end, there was always a big dinner that again, I was asked to come along to, and they'd all be sitting there. So, a lot of the time it would be Brian McDermott singing, Shane Long singing, Shane Long playing Ed Sheeran on the guitar. Was, it's actually, there's not much that bloke can't do. He was pretty useful at that. That was a good night. I was made to go to the bar every night with them as well. So that was another thing. Nigel Gibbs doesn't drink. So McDermott always was looking for drinking buddies, and he would sit there with a big cigar a lot of the time as well. He loved a cigar. So again, you'd never seen Brian McDermott smoking a cigar, but he'd be sitting there with a cigar and having a few beers and just kind of chatting away. It was great fun. And like I said, it was a good team, and it was a brilliant team to cover. And you mentioned Anton Zingarevich when he came in. I mean, that January when they spent the money and bought in JS Roberts and a few others, and then all of a sudden won, I can't remember what it was, it was 7 or 8 games in the bounce. And so all of a sudden they've gone from kind of a pretty decent enough team to, you know, turning into all of a sudden the kind of promotion material. And then, you know, that just kept on going and going and going. And obviously the night that they went up against Forest, that was brilliant. You know, to be at the Mad Stag that night was brilliant. And I know a lot of the, I know Brian McDermott and John Medeski were down in the Purple Turtle that night because I had a few friends who text saying, where are you? But I mean, sadly, the life of a reporter, I was back at home writing everything up and kind of getting everything ready, because I knew the next day would be absolute carnage in terms of, you know, they would want me to be doing stuff for the internet. They would want me to start doing stuff for the paper. So I just had to, sadly, pass on the beers that time and kind of put the champagne on ice and wait for another day to celebrate.
Yeah, it does feel like a lot of those instances would end up on Instagram these days, and that would it would be people like me reporting on it as a major news story, and therefore that's probably why people are a little bit more guarded as to letting those things out now.
Yeah, I mean, like, Reading were always pretty good. I mean, I think I recorded that Shane Long playing the guitar. I think I recorded that and all the other stuff. But yeah, like you say, I mean, it was mad because I remember I think the first time we went up, I think John Medeski was in the marketplace there. I think he fell off. I think he climbed up onto a taxi and fell off the taxi because he was so pissed. So, you know, but yeah, now that would be some, you know, video on someone's phone and John Medeski would be some kind of a internet sensation for a day, which I'm sure he would like. But yeah, it was great times. And, you know, those are probably my favourite memories, those tours, and just kind of, you know, being around a squad that was doing well was always good because it just made your job so much easier as a journalist. It just made, you know, people were happy to talk to you. People were happy to give a bit more and open up and be themselves and kind of just relax a bit more. You know, it's a lot easier to kind of say what you want when things are going well, which is the same across any sport and I guess in any walk of life as well. I remember one other time in Slovenia, actually, it was quite a funny one. So that there was, it was where they were staying was a kind of, there wasn't really much in the town. And, there was this one day, it was a Friday or a Saturday night, there was like a big rave type thing down by the river. And the players had been given the night off, so, you know, it's free rein to go do what you want. And me, Tim Deller and Mick Gooding had been out for a couple of beers and thought, you know what, where's this music coming from? We should investigate this a little further. So we asked the barman of this place we were at and said, look, where's that? And he said, oh, just down there by the river. So I think we hopped in a taxi and told the taxi driver to take us down to this rave down by the river. And it was kind of, you know, there was a lot of people there having fun, a few drinks and music. It was just, you know, a nice summer's evening. And then all of a sudden I remember some guy just run up and like jump on my back and then all of a sudden trying to like pour Jaeger bombs down my throat. It was Noel Hunt wearing a pair of those like Kanye West grill plastic glasses. And we're like, oh God, he's here, is he? So he was there. And who else was there? Ian Hunt was there, Brynjar Gunnarsson, and I think Jay Tab with a four there, kind of, you know, having it large or whatever. Whilst everyone else was back in their rooms playing PlayStation. The next day, Brian McDermott said to me, oh, did you go out last night? I was like, yeah, we went on. We found this rave in the end. And, you know, me and Mick had a good time. Tim had an early bath, I imagine. And then, I said, oh, some of the players were out actually. And he was saying, oh, who were they? I went, oh, I'm not going to say who they were. And, he went, no, tell me. I was like, no, I don't want to dob them in. And then about 5 minutes later, you saw kind of Ian Hart walking through looking a bit worse for wear, but it was their day off. So, you know, it was day off in pre-season. So it's all fair and game. And then, you know, he did his investigations later and he came up to me later and he said, I knew it would be that for. He said, it's always the more experienced heads who are always up for kind of, you know, having a laugh and causing some mischief and, you know, going out and having a few beers on tour. So, that was a strange experience being at Slovenian raid and then all of a sudden bumping into Noel Hunt running around Kanye West glasses.
It feels to me as well like Gunnarsson and Tab particularly were two of the more straight-laced players that we had.
Yeah, but again, I think because they're obviously older professionals and they were, well, I mean, Brignard in particular, you know, he was at the end of his career, and Jay Tab had been around the block. I mean, you know, I think they knew what they could and couldn't do. It wasn't like it was the first time they'd had a drink and the first time they'd been let out. So, you know, they were as booze as the rest of us, I'll say.
Knew when to give and take.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, those players were, I never saw them out in Reading, but I mean, a lot of them didn't live in Reading anyway, but you know, you wouldn't often see them out and about in the town, but, you know, when they could get the chance to go have a few beers, and you know, fair play, you know, why can't they?
Absolutely. Well, Johnny, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you and recounting some of the more interesting memories from tours and whatnot gone by.
Yeah, and a shame, you know, like I say, there were some decent football matches along the way as well. I mean, you mentioned a few of them, that one at Southampton, obviously the Forest game. Well, one of the ones I loved was that Cardiff game away, the playoff game the year before. The first year under McDermott, that Cardiff playoff game away, when they went into that 0-0 and it was Dave Jones at the time as Cardiff boss, and everyone was kind of saying, look, Cardiff are going to absolutely steamroll Reading here. Then all of a sudden, it all went a bit quiet in the Welsh capital when... was it Shane Long scored the first goal or Joe McEnough? I can't remember.
Yeah, McEnough got the third with that sort of weaving run, didn't he?
Right. Yeah. So I mean, that was a great night as well, when you kind of, everyone had written you off, and then all of a sudden, you know, you go into Wembley. So you know, it was brilliant times. I wouldn't swap any of it for the world.
Yeah, classic Reading night that was, the underdogs upsetting the big boys, and one Craig Bellamy I seem to remember as well.
Yes. Yeah. Was he getting a bit of pride up down the tunnel or something? I can't remember. I mean, it was always weird times going to Cardiff, because Dave Jones had this mind of bloke, and it always seemed to be that everyone was kind of kicking off in the tunnel if you'd ever seen him. So it was always always an edgy one, that. So it was even more pleasing to kind of them to go down there and win that one.
Yeah. Well, best of luck with your expeditions in Japan and the Rugby World Cup coming up. And thank you very much for dropping by on our 200th episode.
No worries. And I'll be listening from my travels in Japan this autumn as well. No worries.
Excellent. Thank you very much, mate.
Cheers, Mark.
The Tilehurst End Podcast,
by Reading fans for Reading fans.
And now Charles Watts joins us for the 200th episode, a returning star of the show those days with the podcast extra with yourself and Dan Wimbush. Were happy memories, no doubt, for you and as Get Reading star reporter back in the day. It's nice to have you back on the show, mate.
No, it's nice to be back. Nice to be back remembering good times.
Yes, and we were just talking before we started recording as to whether we're going to be talking about a positive moment or whatnot, as in terms of what your sort of most interesting moment from covering the team over the past few years, and obviously your time at Get Reading. So what would you say is the sort of most interesting moments that you had to deal with?
Well, I mean, there was so much in the time that I was there, and you know, on the pitch there were some great moments, some quite difficult moments as well. But I think as a journalist, the most interesting times for me were the two takeover deals that I was a part of, or that I was covering. I was there, obviously, the first with the ties and everything leading up to that, when it looked like it could be the Indians, it could be the Qataris, it could be the Americans, and it ended up being the ties. And just that whole saga from me breaking the story that the club was up for sale for £1, and it was just huge amounts of debts, and the tax man was chasing Reading. And from that original story, before I published it, I had Nigel Howe ringing me up, basically offering me deals not to run it in return for stories further down the line and stuff like that. And as a journalist, I was just really excited to be involved in that. Obviously, saying no to Nigel and that I'm going to run it, it was for the public interest, and sort of breaking that story and then following it all. And it was just such a mess and lurching from one way to the other. Like I said, possibly look like, or at one point the Qataris had it, and then right at the end they let it go, and then uncovering the damage that Chris Samuelson and everyone was doing, and sort of running that story. And a couple of days later, John Badesi firing Chris Samuelson, and it was just, you know, I was just getting really good information from people behind the scenes, and you know, Reading didn't like it. They wanted it to stay out, and they were constantly at me. And it was just a really good sort of battle of will between the journalist and the club. And then obviously the ties coming in, the whole Samrit Bundik saga thing, which was you know, a press man's dream, to be honest.
A man who I'm pretty sure is in jail now, actually.
Yes, yeah, he is. And a man, when I went over to Thailand, I never reported this, actually, but when I went over for the Thai tour, he sent someone to come and pick me up, and I spent the day with him in Thailand, in Bangkok, and I went to his football team with him up in the executive box, and he told me just lots of stuff I can't report because it was off the record. And originally, I was there to do a big interview with him that was going to be reported, and then he chickened out at the last minute, having spent a day with me. So it was a wasted day in the end, and he didn't want me to publish it, and I think people got in his head and driven back to my hotel. But just that whole thing, it was a remarkable few months, and then obviously the takeover happened with the Thais, and it was just a really, really interesting period as a journalist, and just to get involved in it and seeing all the sides of it. And you know, for me, I had no clue about finances and tax issues and all that. It was totally over my head, and I had to really, really try and learn new things and understand exactly what was happening. It was difficult, but it was exciting. It really was. And then just before I left, actually, it was one of the last big stories I did, when I broke the story that the Chinese were coming in. And again, it was just a really exciting time. There's so much that goes on that I don't report, I couldn't report. And you know, like I said, the deals the club try to offer you to keep you quiet and everything like that. And it was just it was really, really, really interesting times. And I think those two, I look back on those, certainly the journalistic point of view, as the most intriguing and interesting times of my years following Reading. But there were so many great things on the pitch as well. Way, way, way back when, before I was at Get Reading, I started at Reading Chronicle. I covered the 05-06 season as Anthony Smith's sort of understudy. That was just brilliant. Part of my first game was a 5-0 against Millwall. Actually had money on Bobby Conway to score it. And just from then, and then the run to the FA Cup final under Steve Clark, FA Cup semi-final, sorry, and then in a big way for me because it was against Arsenal. Everyone knows my allegiance, and probably the person I was most close to in that squad was Adam Federici, and what happened that day. Now I was just devastated for him. I remember him walking past crying in the mix zone afterwards, sort of getting shepherded past all the press who were trying to speak to him. He wouldn't talk, and then a couple of weeks later he gave me the exclusive, he waited for everyone to leave after the next Reading home game, made sure that everyone had gone, and told me to wait. And then he spoke for the first time, and just seeing the emotion sort of coming out of that's the person I consider as a friend rather than just a footballer. It was really sort of sad to see the effect that had on me. If anyone deserved that, it was him, because he was so good that season. But that whole run to the final was, semi-final was great. And it was just loads of good things. The tour to Thailand was fantastic. Having a really big argument with Hal Roxenkanu on the touchline at training when he came over to me and started saying I was far too negative, and just having a amazing round with him in front of the rest of the squad, with me standing in my corner and him refusing, basically blaming the poor season on me almost.
I'm sure he'll be delighted to hear that we've always had the Hal Robson-Kanu Underachiever Award on the podcast end of year results. Yeah.
I can believe it.
It's interesting when a player, because as a journalist, did you really get the sense that players were kind of constantly reading your things, like following what you were talking about on Twitter and whatnot? Because personally, as a podcast, I kind of get the sense we're kind of one step removed, that they don't really... We have a couple of the youth players follow us on Twitter, but other than that, the first team, is, I don't feel like they bother with us particularly. Did you feel like that, or...?
No, they didn't really. I think most of them follow me on Twitter. And I'm still quite close with some of them. Unfortunately, a couple of them are being sidelined at the moment, especially Chris Gunter and Gareth McCleary. I think probably the remains players are now who I'm closest to. But no, they certainly knew what was reported. And it was tough, because take the FA Cup semi-final run out of it those last few years, certainly before Yap came in, it was pretty poor on the pitch. It was very hard. You as a local journalist, you want to stay positive. You don't want to be negative, but it was impossible not to be negative, really, for the form that Reading was showing. Certainly, that's what I was saying to Hal that time, because, you know, the end of that season, take the FA Cup run out of the way, the end of that season was so bad, especially at home. And for him to basically trying to blame the poor for the ones stirring the fans up to be upset, I know, Hal, if you play well, if you perform, I write good things about you. I want to write good things about you. I don't want to be negative. But and it is hard as a journalist to find that balance, because, you know, it's not like an as a national, or even what I do now as Arsenal, we're so far removed from the first team at Arsenal because they're so protected. But at Reading, you know, I'm there every week. I'm walking through the training ground every week. I'm seeing them every week. And you know for well that they're going to read it, and they're going to not enjoy what they're reading if you slag them off and you're having a go at them. And, so it was tough to balance that relationship, but I always felt that, you know, I wasn't going to hide away from the fact that they were poor. I was going to say they were poor, and most of them took it because they knew it was slightly different with Mr. Robson Carney.
Yeah, well, I suppose he almost got his dream move to Atletico Madrid. I don't know if you know that was at the time. Have you thought that was particularly likely to happen, or whatnot, as he left the club?
No, I knew for when he scored that goal for Wales, I could just imagine what he was like walking through that mix zone after the game. He got his move to the Premier League in the end, but he didn't do too much with it, did he? Although he did come on and score in a minute against Arsenal when I was there reporting on the game.
So he got his own back on you in the end.
Typical, yeah.
Okay, well, brilliant. Thanks for popping by, Charles, and hopefully all is going well in your current role with Goal.
Yeah, no, it's going very well. Thank you very much. And look, I really hope you guys get on to have a good season this season. I'm delighted to see the impact the game has made last season, and nerve-free season for you lot this time around.
Hopefully so. Cheers, mate. Thanks so much.
No worries.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
And the 200th episode of The Tarlhurst End podcast would not be complete without the man who stuck episode one online and prayed that Reading fans would be mildly interested at the very least to listen to his musings on what was going on that week, and that is Dan Wimbush. How is it going, mate?
Mark, hello. Great to be a part of number 200. Congratulations for reaching the milestone.
Thank you. Well, I probably have about 30% of the credit for that, given how many episodes I've done, maybe even 25% of the credit, with obviously the most going with yourself and how, just before we go on to your favourite Reading memory, how did you feel as you put that first episode together?
I was excited. I had been guesting on the Rules Post, done by the excellent Johnny Fordham, and of course Westy, who'd done it even before that as the Reading Football Fancast. So I'd always wanted to do a podcast, but I never really wanted to tread on their turf. I thought they were doing such a great job. I thought I can't offer anything massively different. So when Johnny moved on to Pastures New, and Westy said that, you know, I don't really want to host anymore, but I'm happy to guest, I was like, I'm great. I'll pick up the mantle and go with it. And we went from there. We started with, you know, Mr. Watts came on. It was his first season in the job as well. He started as part of the main show. Then we splintered it off into the podcast extra. And things just continued from there. So, yeah, fantastic memory. Sticking episode one up. Get episode 100. I loved the Christmas specials we did. Before we get on to the bulk of the matter, my favourite podcast memory was doing a very impromptu show from a Manchester hotel room as we were about to go to the Football Blogging Awards, because Steve Clark looked like he was going off to Fulham. So that was a very surreal moment. But it showed, you know, the power of the pod, you know, being able to get opinions out there, being able to sort of engage with the fan base. And that's what I always really wanted to do. I was a long time listener of podcasts, to, you know, the Fancast and the Rules Post. And I wanted to provide a service, a show for Reading fans, be they exiles, be they local season ticket holders, whatever, so they could sort of chat and be part of the conversation if they didn't necessarily have that many people to talk to. So really enjoyed it. Was really proud of the effort I did. And as I said, congratulations for keeping it going.
Thank you very much. And considering, as you know, week to week, the sort of stuff we get to talk about, there have certainly been some interesting moments. Being a Reading fan, I always claim, is a very up and down, very non-boring affair as football fandom goes. And your favourite memories then, where do they come from, the highs or the lows?
They come from the highs. I mean, I've been very lucky. My first Reading season was 94-95, where Reading finished second in Division 1, their highest ever finish to that point. We got to Wembley and, you know, we're 2 minutes away from playing in the Premiership. So that was a fantastic start. We then had the lows, getting relegated, the dross under the late Tommy Burns, and the early struggles under Pardew. But from that point on, really, up until probably the last couple of seasons, it's been nothing but great times. So I feel very, very lucky. You know, my dad, who had to watch them play in Division 4 and stand at Elm Park with 3,000 fans and the threat of hooliganism and all of that, you know, I bypassed all of that. So I've been very, very fortunate. Two promotions to the Premier League, an FA Cup semi-final I got to miss for my wedding, numerous other cup runs, and good times as well. So very, very lucky. So they come from the highs. But my real highs as a Reading fan, it didn't come in 2005, 2006, because I was away at university in Lancaster, which for those of you who don't know, it's far away in the northwest, about as far away from Reading as you can get. So I had the misfortune of missing that glorious season and the first year in the Premier League. I did get to a few Northern away games. Bolton in 2006-07 away, that 3-1 victory particularly standing out, because I went to the game with a Bolton supporters club from Lancaster. So I made myself quite quiet on the bus home. They all knew who I was, but that was a great day. But so the real highs of the club, I didn't feel massively a part of because I was so far away. But when it came to 2011-12, I'd started the Tile Est End the season before. I was right in the thick of it. And I was fortunate at the time to be good friends with someone who knew one of the players. So I was able, very fortunately, to get quite a lot of free tickets for away games when they sort of had spares going. And if not, I put my own hand in my pocket and I had a lot of free time. I wasn't married at the time, didn't have the parental responsibilities I had now. So I got to go away to games. It was the most I'd sort of gone away. Call it hopping on the bandwagon, call it whatever you like. But I went to so many of those away games in that run in 2011-12. But the two peaks were West Ham away, Southampton away. Football is all about those memories where, you know, you close your eyes or you watch a YouTube highlight and it just gives you tingles. And any time I watch that West Ham highlight, I'm immediately there. I was about, I think, three rows from the front. And the elation when Gorks heads in the equaliser is just, I want to jump up all over again from my seat, wherever I am, whether I'm in my study, whether I'm at work, wherever I've got, I need a bit of a pick-me-up because we've been, smashed away from home. I go back to that video and that Gorks header, and then, minutes later, we're just delighted to be level because we were up in a lot of pressure and West Ham were very much expected to win that game despite the form we'd been in.
Yeah.
And then a couple of minutes after we equalised, Noel Hunt and Jason Roberts combined to bundle home 2-1. Just watch the video if you've never seen it before, because the hashtag bounce watch, fantastic. And just the elation, that was when you really believed, because we'd gone on this fantastic run inspired by Jason Roberts. And that was the moment when you thought, actually, Southampton and West Ham can be caught. We are properly in this race now. And of course, we went away and we picked up some more scrappy results. The games against Leeds and my chronology is a bit messed up at this point. But, I remember going away to Peterborough and we lost and you thought, is it meant to be? And then you have the do or die showdown at St Mary's. And again, the knowledge, if we won this game, it's basically done. We are promoted. But Southampton was such a fantastic side with the likes of Ricky Lambert and Billy Sharp smacking in the goals. Had players like Lallana. They were everybody's, the media darlings. That was their team. And we went there and the away end was packed with Reading fans. Everybody in a great mood. Evening kickoff on the telly. The atmosphere, it was tense, but it was an excited kind of tense. It wasn't the playoff final kind of tense where it was like, oh my God, it's all on the line here. Because we had that sort of fallback where, okay, if we lost, we're probably still in the driver's seat to finish in the top two. But the knowledge that if we won, we're probably going to be champions. And of course, you get that delicious goal from Jimmy Kebbe crossing for Jason Roberts to nod home and stuns, the home end into silence. And we're going absolutely bonkers. And of course, Southampton come back and it's tense and it's 1-1. And you're starting to think, you know what? Point, still a good result. Let's just hang on here, lads. But Adam Lafondra comes off the bench, did what he did so many times that season. Go back and look at the amount of games that Reading came from behind to get results that year, be it Bristol City, Millwall, sticking in my mind as well. And once again, it was Lafondra who did the business. And again, that roar, the emotion, the relief, the disbelief that we had when Alfie scored the first, yet alone, when he goes and sends us completely delirious with the second to make sure of it. And we can, the party can absolutely kick off. The hair on my arms are sticking up just talking about it. That's how much, I remember it and enjoyed it. And it felt like winning a cup. It felt like winning a cup final. It was the closest thing we've sort of come, because that 2005-06 season was so, you know, it was a stroll at the end. And 2001-2002 was from a lower division. This was us reaching the Premier League in such unlikely circumstances. And that day just will always stick by me. Those two away trips, just for me, the pinnacle is my sort of, call it my strongest time as a fan, because I was going to so many games. I was connected to the club and doing the Tilehurst End. And I'll never have that sort of feeling again. Maybe if we go on a sensational European tour one day, as unlikely as that sounds here in 2019. But yeah, I would, as I said, any time I'm feeling a bit down about football and I think, well, why do I bother? You know, oh, I'm dragging myself out again. I'll put one of those two games on YouTube and it reminds me, that's why you go through the grind. That's why you go through and you sit and you write about 6-0 defeats at Peterborough in the Cup. It's why you sit there and, you know, you pick yourself up after a playoff final or a cup semi-final defeat, because you know that at some point your faith is going to be rewarded. And those two nights in particular, our fandom was totally rewarded. It was a hard-working, it was a gutsy team. You felt connected to everything. And obviously, things didn't pan out very well from there, and we've got to where we are now. But you know, for those few months at the sort of early 2012, it really did feel like we were again going to build something special.
It's funny, isn't it? Because those two games were, as I went to them as well, and the sense that you know, you remember all the, I personally can envisage all the goals, as I'm sure you can, from exactly where you sat. But the two, it's weird how the little weird memories stick in your mind as well. Like I can remember at half time of that West Ham game, they put the goal highlights on the screen right behind the Reading fans, and we were all cheering that, like, you know, because they were straight before half time and got the goals. And that was a real just joyous moment that sticks in my mind. And the one from Southampton was because I think you get a park and ride bus to and from sort of away car park at Southampton. And I remember being on it as we crossed over a bridge and like slowed down for traffic light or something. We could look down on a quite deserted sort of provincial railway station. And as we kind of looked down, there were two Southampton fans, a couple probably in their like mid-30s or something. And we all kind of waved at them and everything. And this woman, who I'm sure she is a perfectly lovely woman 99% of the time and would never think of doing this in other scenarios, but looked up at me, who must have been like a 17-year-old boy, and just stuck her middle finger up straight at me. And the whole bus just straight away wet itself with laughter. It's such a unique moment.
But the thing about that is, we as Reading fans, particularly, you know, those of us from the sort of post-90, sort of 94, 95 era, we know exactly how it feels to be in that woman's position. We've all sat at Wembley watching other fans party.
Yeah.
You know, we've been at the Medeiskys, Birmingham had their promotion party. We've had the playoff semi-final defeats. We've had the cup quarter-final defeat to Aston Villa, the semi-final defeat to Arsenal. We know exactly how it feels. So it makes those moments when Reading actually surprise you and get the job done so much more satisfying, and they stick more in the memory. Maybe it's because I'm just naturally a pessimist, but I see, you know, I could count, I've just rattled off 6-7 examples of where we're the ones with, you know, crying into our scarves and kicking a can down the street. But for those glorious nights, it was our turn, and especially because we were the underdogs, and the media sort of coverage, because it was Sam Allardyce's West Ham and Nigel Adkins, free-flowing Southampton, it felt nice just to crash the party.
Yeah, and that is certainly something that we as a club do tend to do when we get promoted and whatnot. We don't tend to come from being the favourites and the much fancied team, and perhaps that is something that we're going to experience more in the next couple of years, because we're certainly not going to get, you know, the status and whatnot of the as the relegated clubs and everything in the Championship. So we'll see, you know, how we can compare those moments in the next 5 years and see if we can have them again. But for now, thanks very much for popping onto the show, Dan. And again, thank you for your efforts in setting up the Tilehurst End as well.
That is absolutely fine. If we get to episode 400, that means, you know, we would have reached 2024. So, you know, I hope you're ready, Mark.
Yeah, I need Tim to sort me out a new 6-year contract for that. I think maybe I'm up at the end of the season, can get a bit of a pay boost.
Absolutely. Guess beats Ron Gourlay.
Yeah, he's the master of unnecessary pay boosts, isn't he? Okay, cheers, mate. Thank you.
Take care.
Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
And joining us now on the show is Alan West, Westy, a man of royalty for the podcasting history in terms of Reading FC, if I, you know, can pardon the pun. How is it going, Alan?
Very well, thank you. Good to be back on the show.
Yeah, and 200th episode. Did you really think when the Tarlhurst End kind of took over duties, we'd make it this far, or did you kind of think those kids aren't, they haven't got a chance?
Do you know, I wouldn't have handed it over if I didn't think it was in good hands, Mark. And I think you actually done a fantastic job, all of you, including Wim as well, of moving the show forward. And congratulations to all of you.
Thank you very much. Well, as it's our 200th episode, our quest for people to tell us their favourite Reading FC moment, I'd like to hear yours, whether it's as a podcaster from the old Westy Williams days or as a fan, of course. You know, which was your favourite Reading FC moment you're going to talk about today?
We could do a few, I think. I'm going to go a little bit further back than some of you guys, because obviously you're a bit younger than me, unfortunately. I think one of my favourite moments, especially as a fan at Madejski Stadium, had to be the semi-finals between Wigan and Reading, playoff semi-finals, just for the sheer drama of the last 10, 15 minutes or so. I remember, well, even now, I still sometimes, when I'm having a bit of a low point, I might put it on because it is on YouTube and it's well worth a watch. I think Martinez was playing for Wigan at the time as well. And for those who don't remember it, basically Reading were 1-0 down. They needed to get back in the game for a 0-0 first leg. Butler scores. Again, I think it was about 15 minutes in time, if my memory serves me correct. And Nicky Forster had come off the bench. And basically, he run them ragged for the last 15 minutes. And it culminated in him getting a penalty. And Curran taking it in injury time against Roy Carroll, who played for Man United before that. And they missed the penalty and Forster scored the rebound. And I don't think I've ever celebrated as much as I did on that occasion. And I think there's another one that always sticks out in my mind, again from Madejski Stadium, is when they got promoted against Brentford, again, last game of the season at Brentford, 1-1 draw, Jamie Curran, I think everyone remembers famously. But for me, the experience of the after party and stuff, because my friend at the time and people who listened to the show originally will remember that my friend used to be the coach driver, and he got us into the players' party that day. So we celebrated with the players and we even got a lift home on the team bus at the end of the night, a little bit worse for wear, and a few training kits better off, which was quite nice, and half a ton of Jaffa cakes that ended up in my fridge as well.
as a quote unquote younger fan, that's for personally, that label is slipping pretty fast.
For that
semi-final against Wigan is one that's spoken about quite a lot in terms of Reading folklore, and when the Madejski Stadium finally became Reading's home, how would you sort of position that in terms of the club history? How much did it mean, and why did it mean so much at that point?
Well, I think actually, if you look at it, I mean, in isolation, it was amazing drama, and I think that's why we all go to football, because you don't get many of them games, and you could say has had amazing drama during it. But when you do, it sort of gives you the bug to go for another three or four seasons till the next one comes along. But I think in folklore, it doesn't rate that high, because they didn't go on to go through into the next league. They got beat in the final, as we famously know, because we don't win finals in general. So we didn't actually win the final. But my memory of the game was, it was amazing. It was a really great finish to a football match. And the only other game that I can ever compare to that, again, going back further, and again, something you can pick up on YouTube if you've never seen it, is the semi-final Simog Cup against Coventry City, the penalty shootout, and Dukesy scores the winning goal. And it was only when I watched this back, again, I was about 9 at the time. It's only when I watched this game back that I realised, because I sort of like to watch what's going on around the action. Do you know what I mean? Because you've seen the action, so I like to see what's going on around it. And the thing that sticks in my mind is when Michael Jules goes to take the last penalty. People are already on the pitch celebrating like we've won. And I interviewed him on the show when we first started out years back, and he said that the closer he got to the goal, the bigger the goalkeeper looked. And it was Steve Grzywiec time, which was he was a big guy. He said, and I didn't think I was going to score. I just put my head down, stuck it, luckily, in the top corner. And again, the rest is history. So in folklore-wise, I'd say that game resonated more, because it was the first sort of real cup competition we'd ever won. Luton were in the top league at the time, and I think they were playing in three cup finals, if my memory serves me correct. So that was amazing, especially as that year they ended up getting relegated as well. So I think sort of that highlight of that year glosses over the bad stuff. Also, when somebody dies, you always remember the good stuff about them and we forget all the bad. And I think there's a bit like that, you know, same sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think that it's interesting when you talk about players or fans rather running on the pitch. And you get the sense that at the moment, if Reading got to a big stage like that, fans would not be able to have that sort of optimism, because we've had since that moment, continual sort of disappointments. And you mentioned that Walsall playoff final, which was probably, of all the playoff finals, probably the worst one in terms of, you know, for Reading and being the favourites and whatnot and losing it. But it's interesting how fans sort of, maybe their sort of perspective has changed as well over the years. And also to kind of relate that to your going to the post-game party, the post-promotion party, is another thing that feels to me like just kind of wouldn't happen so much these days.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't. And I remember that obviously Alan Pardew was in charge on that occasion, and he invited my mate up, Simon. My mate said, oh, well, I'm with my mates. And he said, no, bring them up as well. So whether that had happened now, I don't know. It's certainly a great memory to, especially as I missed the game. I didn't go to the game. I watched it at the ground like a lot of other fans did that day. But yeah, it was just a really great day all round. It couldn't have gone any better other than the satellite link missing 15 minutes of the second half. But hey, it didn't matter in the end, because like I said, you tend to gloss over the bad bits and just remember the good.
Yeah, you do, definitely. And also just a quick word in terms of your podcasting and everything. If there's a favourite moment from the podcasting days, and what would you sort of pick out from that?
Well, from the humble beginnings in my back room with the washing machine on in the background that you could hear quite audibly, I think the best, and it's a shame actually, a lot of them shows, I've looked for them since, and they're all sort of, although you can find them, there's no audio to them anymore, so they've sort of lost to the ages. But what I used to do, which is done a little bit differently now, is I used to have like quirky bits in it, and I think one of my favourite bits of what I'd call quirkiness was when we used to do Confessions of the Coach Driver, where my friend used to come on and tell us stuff that had happened during or after matches or between the managers and stuff. Again, something I don't think we get away with nowadays, but we certainly did then. And the other thing that really sticks in my mind was when I interviewed Dylan Kerr, and he sat down for about an hour and 10 minutes with me over Skype, was in and out because he was in South Africa at the time. And he talked through his career and some of the stuff that he got up to and some of the rituals that they had at Leeds and Sheffield Wednesday. And again, I think that's been lost to the ages. But again, it was a fantastic insight into what I would say was sort of 1980s professional football. And that, again, was one of my highlights. And it was nice to be involved and start it, really. And I know Paul, who obviously he moved to Germany a long time ago, he enjoyed it, and we got a lot of joy out of doing it. And I mean, ever since I've been in Daisy Stadium, and we've had fans come up to us and say thanks for starting the podcast and that, which always means a lot to us, because it was never about the money, and you'll know this yourself, Mark, it's never about the money. It's because we didn't get
money.
We never got any. It wasn't about that. It's just about sort of giving something back of our enjoyment, and you know, for the fans to have something to listen to on the train to work or whatever. And I'm sure a lot of them still do that now. And it just the hope for all of our sakes that it carries on for another 10, 20, 30 years.
Well, it's funny you should mention Paul Williams, because that is kind of, it's difficult for me to say this now because I haven't spoken to him yet, but from my position in before the edit, he will be coming up next on the show and be talking about his history and whatnot with Reading podcasting. But thank you very much for joining us, Westy. I'm a little bit surprised that you didn't go with winning the 17-18 prediction league as your highest, your best.
I think that's the only year I've ever won it in all the, 12 years we've been doing the show.
And I suppose we've always got the 19-20 prediction league. Maybe I'll take out a couple of people just to make it a little bit easier for us.
Well, the thing is, I like to look forward at my successes rather than the back, you know. So let's hopefully we are looking forward to a 19-20 prediction league win.
Awesome. Thank you very much for popping by then, mate.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
And now joining us on the show, as I've just mentioned while talking to Westy, is Paul Williams, who perhaps our younger viewers are not quite aware of the podcasting heritage that lays before the Tarlhurst End in the days when Paul and Westy would sit down and talk about Steve Coppell's Reading team and Brendan Rodgers' Reading team and how
basically the formation of the greatest era of the club kind of unfolded, and Paul joins us back on the Reading podcasting scene on the Tarlhurst End now. Paul, you did come on a couple of times back in the day of the Tarlhurst End before you moved away to Germany.
Just after I moved, actually. I did a couple of calls with Wim just to sort of touch base and kind of see, oh God, that's so business speak, isn't it? But give an idea where my life is these days. But yeah, to sort of get back involved and just sort of give a view of what it was like being a fan living abroad, really.
Yeah, if I can ask you about that before we go on to your sort of favourite moment, how is it as a Reading fan out in Germany? Do you have the iFollow on every weekend? Is it a case of, you know, tuning in and seeing what's going on? As a bit of a luxury this season, or this last season, being able to watch?
It's been much better now since iFollow started. I think it's the third year of it this year, so I've had it the last 2 years. Having a two-year-old means it's not quite as easy to sit down and watch four games as I would like to, because, you know, he wants all the attention. But I do tend to stick all the games on of a weekend during the week, when the midweek games, when it's much easier, because, you know, it's past his bedtime, so I can tend to watch those. But when we first moved out here, it was basically just, you know, picking up any games that were on Sky and getting down the pub to watch those. But now I'm probably in the lucky situation where I might see more games than most Reading fans in the UK do.
Yeah, and let's go on then to your favourite Reading memory then. As a fan, you know, as someone who got to comment on, kind of as we are now, on such an interesting Reading period from that Cockle team. And Rogers, you were just telling me beforehand that your podcast was recorded the night that Rogers got sacked, and all the kind of ups and downs of that era as well. What's your one standout moment?
So the one standout moment for me is I'm actually going back to April 20th, 2002, and I'm sure it'll be a standout moment for many Reading fans, and it's that moment, Cuerten's equaliser at Brentford. The reason I've gone for that, and I was thinking a lot of it over the last few days since we spoke at the weekend, is basically, I feel now where we are today, that goal was really the sliding doors moment for us as a club. And you look at where we were in the third division, we were struggling to get out of the third division, and we were losing a game at our immediate rivals with, 12, 13 minutes to go, and a lot that we're going to go into the playoffs again. And none of us as Reading fans need to remind ourselves of what our playoff record's like. So the moment that goal went in, I was there that day in the away end, where literally standing directly in the angle of the ball crossing over the line, and the delirium that followed. It was a moment of pure joy, but I think it's what led us onto the path of where we've been over the last, 17 years.
If you think of how the club has sort of evolved, as you say, in that past sort of 17 years since then, how was it in the sort of years leading up to that? How was it a case of the club obviously had ambitions, the new stadium and everything like that? As a fan, what did you see as the club's potential at that point?
I think at that point in the late 90s, early noughties, when we just moved to the Medeski, it was a time where you thought, actually, there's a plan here. And obviously it didn't start particularly well with the last year at Elm Park, as getting relegated and having to start down in League One, as it, or whatever it was called then, Division One or Division Two, as it may have been then, having to start again and suddenly being a big fish in a smaller pond. You know, we were there to be got at in that division because of the new stadium. You know, you look at clubs like Sunderland and so down there now, clubs want to go there and play in front of the bigger crowds and the better stadiums. And that was a real mental shift, I think, for the club and for us as fans, where we probably I've spent my entire supporting club at that point, Reading always being the underdog, and that, you know, we were often happy with a mid-table finish. Now it had to be promotion. It had to be promotion quickly. And then you thought, okay, we get back up, there's a base to do something. Obviously, I think that went way surpassed what we thought we were going to be able to do. But that change of feel around the club was the biggest moment, I think, in around that time.
And let's talk about your sort of podcasting entrance as well. What was the circumstances where you sort of set up with Westy and got things going? Because am I right in saying basically before that, Reading's sort of fan coverage, generally speaking, there wasn't much to really talk about?
Not really. I mean, I guess the only sort of things we had as fans were the fanzines, and they were kind of slowly dying out around that time. I mean, Westy and I have known each other since we were kids. You know, he's one of my oldest friends, and we've been going to watch football together for as long as I can remember. And we just basically set it up. I think it was Westy's idea. He decided that, you know, there was an option there. He got all the gear in, got all the kit. And it's a case of, right, let's just meet on a Monday night round his house in the kitchen, have a beer or a cup of tea, depending on what we fancied, and just talk. And I think the fact that we've known each other for so long, we could take the mickey out of each other, you know, we could, yeah, I'm sure you listened to it. Hopefully, I always had that feel of being quite a relaxed show, and people really warmed to that. And I think that's what helped get Reading as a podcast, a potential podcast topic on the map. And yeah, it's crazy that we were able to start getting AD Williams to come in and talk to us. And obviously, AD is now working in radio, but he was still looking to break into broadcasting at that point. And Westy may have told the same story, but he turned up at Alan's house for this interview. We just want to have a chat with him, and he pulls up, knocks on the door, and says, "Do you want to get changed into a suit? And I've got a suit in there. We can do it all smart." And it's like, mate, we're in a kitchen. It's fine. just sit down, have a cup of tea, just have a chat with us. We had Dylan Kerr on the show. We had Chaka. We had Trevor Senior on the show, and so later. So we had, you know, we're able to talk to a lot of our heroes. We talk to them, you know, just as another bloke, rather than, oh my God, it's Dylan Kerr that you might have done in that situation where you're at the stadium. It was just a lot of fun, to be honest. It was something that we were, as I'm sure you know as well, Mark, it's just a laugh at the end of the day.
And how, as a sort of personal question, how do you think it's best to get through those sort of discussions when the club isn't doing so well, perhaps? Because I know that probably as a listener, it can get a bit tedious when you're listening to the sort of podcast like us, where we're saying, oh, we've lost again, we're kind of running over the same sort of problems. Do you find that in the podcasting sort of world, do you think that is, you kind of view it differently, you kind of maybe get fed up with it more, or, you know, you still find it interesting to talk about?
And Westy may disagree, but I think we always actually found it a lot easier to record a show when we were rubbish.
Yeah, I can guess that.
There was a lot more to talk about, and you could throw more gallows humour in there. You know, because we had that distance from the club, obviously being fans, you could say exactly what you felt. You never had to do what, you know, Charles probably had to do when he was doing his thing, and Johnny had to do when he was working for the Post, where you had to keep that professionalism, and you couldn't really say what you wanted to say, or you might say off air when you're doing a podcast. You know, we could really go to town, and if we felt that was necessary. But we found it often got more boring when we were winning, because there's only so much you can talk about. Like, okay, lads, yeah, they went out and won 3-0 again this week. That's the fourth game in a row they've won by 3 or 4 goals. So from a fan point of view, the 106 year was brilliant. It was unsurpassed. You're never going to see anything like it again as a Reading fan. As someone producing a podcast, it kind of got a bit repetitive because there wasn't really anything else we could say. But when we were losing, and Rogers' era being the obvious one there, as you said, we were lucky enough to be recording the day he got fired, it gave us more material, and it gave us more that we could get our teeth into, and it just made for a more interesting show. And it also meant that there's more interaction with our fans, because people are always more keen to have a dig than they are to go, bloody hell, that was great.
Yeah, the size of our mailbag after defeats compared to after wins definitely attests to that. So before I let you go, Paul, as a fact that you've not been on the sort of shows and whatnot over the years, and this, bearing in mind this is going to go out about a month after we're talking, because I like to think of myself as quite organised and getting these interviews lined up well in advance of the 200th episode, but the club and the state it's in now, what's your kind of take and how the team's looking at the moment?
At the moment, I think it could go either way. I'm liking some of the business that we've done over the summer. Morrison is a great defender for this level. Obviously Miazga coming back is an absolute bonus. He's probably too good for us, so to have him is for another year is great. My wife and her family are actually Stoke fans, so I've had a lot of views of Charlie Adam coming, not all positive. I'm not against that move. I think it could be a stroke of genius, or if it goes horribly wrong, he can be gone in 12 months, so it's not a big deal. I'm excited for this season because I'm excited by a lot of the young talent that we've got that are actually going to get a chance, because I think even though the club are quite rightly proud of the fact we've had 50 graduates playing the first team, it's often been hard for them to properly get a run of games. They might come in for 2 or 3 games and that might be their lot. But I think this year, you know, we got the obvious talents of Elise coming through, but you know, there's going to be people like Barrett or Howe who have got what it takes. It looked to see look like they've got what it takes to play at this level, who are going to get the chance to show it and probably show it over 5 or 10 games rather than 2 or 3 games. Yeah, I just think August and September are going to be massive. If we can start well, then we're going to be comfortable this year. If we start badly, confidence could go. The kind of euphoria is the wrong word, but the positive atmosphere around the club that we've had since Gomes has come in, that could disappear if we start struggling. So yeah, August, September are going to be massive. And if we can get 1 or 2 more bodies in between now and the 8th, that will really help us. But we need to be realistic with the financial situation. That may not happen, but let's see where we go.
Well, thank you very much for popping back on to the show for this 200th episode. And hopefully you'll have a good position from your couch this year as Reading, as you say, could go either way.
Perfect. No, glad to be involved and look forward to speaking to you on the 400th.
Yeah, well, God knows what sort of situation we'll be in then. Thanks very much, Paul.
Cool. Cheers, Matt.
So there we have it, folks. But don't go away, because we have one last treat for you. Before that, though, I have to thank the people who make this happen. Of course, Wim for starting the whole thing, but of course, Westy, Williams, Handbag, Sim, Ollie, Johnny, Tom Crocker, and everybody else who has popped up on the show over the years. And a huge thank you as well to our Patreon patrons who have helped fund our little adventures, and massively to our listeners. We simply would not do this show were there not people out there passionate enough about Reading Football Club to tune in weekly in your thousands. And to leave you, we've put together a cute little highlights package from the past 200 episodes to accompany our wonderful theme of Violet Class with Biscuit Men. Please enjoy, and once again, a huge, huge thank you. And as ever, come on, you arse.
Jose Gomes, welcome to the Tallest End.
They can have very good players, but if you have the ball, what can do the very good player?
Cool. Welcome to the Tallest End, Kevin Doyle and Brian McDermott.
Silver on British Airways now.
Oh, nice. You'll be allowed in the lounge soon.
No, I'm allowed in the lounge, but you get a better lounge if you get to gold.
You're aiming to find the next Kevin Doyle, right?
No, I'm trying to get to gold. Forget Kevin Doyle. You can't find another Kevin Doyle. It's impossible.
Got a little bit of luck everything on there, and then we sort of believed in ourselves and stuff. Instead of getting enough, we just started to play really well and really striking.
Welcome to the Tallest End. So, John Medeski, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
Because at the heart of Reading Football Club, in my humble opinion, is community. And that's what it's all about.
Jan, it's my absolute pleasure to welcome you to the Tallest End podcast. Paul Clement came in.
Who?
Paul Clement.
Paul Clement. Here we go. I'm going to be honest.
I didn't
have a great,
what
can I say, great feeling when you came in.
So, Nicky Choi, welcome to the Tallest End podcast. Keith McPherson, welcome to the Tallest End. Steve Richardson, welcome to the Tallest End.
But then again, what would you expect from such an unprofessional joke of a podcast?
We're two of the guys from the Amazons. We're here with Matt, who is the lead singer / guitarist. How's it going, Matt?
Hi.
And Joe, who's the drummer. How's it going?
Hello.
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 And we'll move on now as I talk to Farrah Williams, the most capped England player in football of all time period.
I'm funny. So funny, aren't I?
Adam Mofondo, welcome to the Tallest End podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Captain of Jeddah Mackinac. Jeddah, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing?
Mr. Stuart Lovell. Stuart, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. So I was absolutely convinced when I ran up. I just thought I'd been really smart. He thinks I'm going to his left. I'm going to go to his right. And I'll send him the wrong way. And I think because of that, I just you know, took a little bit off it in terms of not being as precise as I should have been. Hit it hard, but hit it at a really good height for the goalkeeper.
It's all appreciated. It's the reason we keep doing this show, and it's the reason we'll continue to do this show until you get thoroughly sick of us. So,
never!
Well, someone needs to get sick of me, but I'm not sure if I've got 100 more.
It is the new TT era with your new host, Mark Mayo, here, reporting on what is a fantastic win for all concerned. No matter what part of the season you're in, winning 1-0 away at Leeds is always something to enjoy.
club's head of communications, Mark Bradley. Mark, hello.
Hello.
And the club's commercial director, Adam Benson. Adam, hello.
Hello.
Without further ado, it is the first part of that two-part interview with Jim Carrachan.
And we went to Southampton, which was, that was one of the hardest viewings of my life. We nearly got kicked out. I think me and Ledge were having a fight with one of the Southampton fans behind us. We were on the brink there, the steward had sent us calm down, so that was unbelievable. The most exhilarating, feeling ever watching that game.
It's not just passing game, you cannot put long ball. No.
Yeah.
It's a mix. The game is not this. The game is not mathematics.
And that is trust in your players to decide when the
right
moment is.
Exactly. During the training, the thing is give the players the tools that they must use during the game when they have the problems and when they have the football situations. If they have the space that they can use when we recover the ball and the opponent, they put a lot of players in the attack and we can see that we have a lot of free space that we can use in the fast attack or a counter-attack, Why you cannot use? Why you cannot give a long pass or playing behind? What is the problem? I don't see any problem.